some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is a stalking astronaut favorite.
And this week we are talking about our attempt at Returnal. Returnal is a roguelike third-person shooter developed by Housemarque and published by Sony for the PS5 in 2021.
And let's get it out of the way.
Let's get
yelled at.
mea culpa, baby.
Guess who yelled at? So originally our plan was just to cover this. I think that we were both looking for an excuse to play it.
Yep.
And we were going to do this over a couple episodes before Elden Ring and cover it. And we both, you and I don't always agree on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of games, like we have, I think we're more simpatico than not. But this was a case where we both, I feel like, it reminded me of, I went on a date once.
Okay.
With a girl. We went to a family fun center and we did a, one of those fake roller coasters.
Okay.
You know, those motion rides.
Mm-hmm.
And we both felt real sick and it was an early date. So we were still self-conscious a little bit and we were both kind of like testing the waters of what would happen if one of us had to go to the bathroom and vomit.
Okay.
Like, you know, and so we were both just kind of like, yeah, no, that was fun. I don't know though. I'm feeling a little, I don't know if I ate something or, you know, and then eventually the seal broke and we were both like, I feel really sick. And there's this huge relief because we were no longer hiding it from each other or doing this Yomi thing. We both were just like, God, that fucking sucked. And I feel like you and I were both like that about stopping playing this.
Yeah.
Like just kind of like, hey, what if we didn't do this?
What if we didn't? Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. I still kind of want to. And then as soon as we decided not to, I felt such an immediate wave of relief that it is hard to describe.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It really uncomplicated things for me. When we changed the rubric, when I realized that we didn't sign a contract, we just said, hey, this is the plan. But the cool thing is plans can change, and I don't think my experience with it is invalid because I didn't complete it. Additionally, I am reserving the right to like return to this in the future without a time constraint, because a big part of this is this structure and the way that it implements being a roguelike it feels like poison to me in particular. You know,
yeah,
we've definitely covered roguelikes more frequently recently, but like it's not something I generally seek out. And the running in place feeling just brought the sinking sense of, oh God, no, to me. Well,
and I will say, as the roguelike person who is going to force you to play many more roguelikes over the course of our lifetime,
yeah,
this one even instills the running in place feeling to me as, you know, it being one of my favorite genres.
Yeah.
You know, I love a one and done complete game experience that you sit down and do in one session.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a run of Isaac or a run of Monster Train is a distinct game.
Yes.
And being able to sit down and do that in 45 minutes is really appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
This game is at war with itself in a way, just in that regard. Like, we're going to have some sugar to talk about this as well.
Yeah.
But there's the rogue. I think this is a really pretty horrendous roguelike.
Yes.
Like, regardless of its quality as a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to head off the pass because people, you know, again, time to get yelled at. Head off the pass. I understand that there's a reason for it. Like, I understand there's a narrative conceit
mm-hmm.
That justifies the roguelike, and there may be a mechanical conceit, it doesn't come in at first, at the very least.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of talk about the mechanics and stuff that we covered. And really, like, this is like a postmortem on largely like what it was drawing us back to it and then what made us bounce off it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in you know, kind of in an experimental sense.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get up front that, like, well, I think we both see good stuff in this.
Yes.
And there's a tons of people's game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
People love it. When I say it's a bad roguelike, that doesn't mean I'm saying it's a bad game or your taste is bad.
Yeah.
You know, don't take things personally. That's
Please.
Weird. and it's not, you know, it doesn't say anything about you that we had this experience with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think that part of the weirdness here is that we're going to be trying to make a case for, like, why it's a bad fit for us, you know, in its form, and also why it's a bad fit for the show. You know, and this is actually pretty similar, you know, when we covered Dead Cells, right? We didn't, neither of us beat that, you know, it was right before a big update came out, and it would have been weird to immediately get scholared on that. But this feels pretty akin to that to me, where I love the way Dead Cells feels in the hands. I love the way that this feels in the hands. I think that the tone and story of this is really, really compelling. Like, it seemed like a really good sci-fi psychological horror game to me.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what happens, but the game is trying to stop me from doing that, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. So this falls into that Dead Cells bucket of being a game that's, like, really fun to play moment to moment, but I desperately, desperately wish that it was a static bespoke experience. I wish that there was a mode that I could play that was like, hey, here's the designed one. And then everybody who wanted the Chalice Dungeons could get the Chalice Dungeons. You know? Well,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's a couple things you said that I want underlined. One is that you said, we're going to talk about this kind of a bad fit in general, but then also for the show. I want to note, just because this is a criticism that comes in a lot, whenever we tap out on something or dislike something, people are like, oh, it's because you had to play it for a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for the show, I would have bounced off this at the exact same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not simply that we were playing it on a deadline. It was also just, I was not having fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's again, you can disagree with that and it doesn't have to match your experience, but it's not disingenuous. It's not something that was an artificial construct of the job.
Yeah.
I just wasn't having fun playing it.
I think we both hit the same wall where it was like, okay, the first biome is taking shape and I'm understanding, like, what the rhythm is, etc. Then we get to the boss, die, and then go back and realize, oh shit, the iteration loop on this is actually super long. That it's very long and extremely discouraging.
Yeah, very discouraging. There's not a lot of avatar progression. There's a lot of, like, roguelike rules, I think, that it kind of breaks.
Yeah.
And something else that I was thinking about that this does, because I'm always seeking to understand my personal gamer demographic.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to folks who do like this, one of the things is people get drawn in just by the play. Like, it's the moment to moment, right? It's a Dead Cells thing. Like, it's not about, you know, any of the superstructures around it. It's literally just, how does it feel to move around?
Yeah.
And I think in a general gaming sense, I am way less motivated by that than most people, most of my peers.
Necessary, but not sufficient.
Yeah, exactly. Not even necessary. Like, yeah. I'll play a game that is clunky as shit. Like, I'll play a Dark Souls 2. I'll play it, you know. It's to me, Dark Souls 2 and Bloodborne both feel fine.
Mm-hmm.
In the hands, I don't get that kind of, like, this is fucking thrilling.
Yeah.
I'm moving fast. Like, I don't get that. And that's what carries, you know, I talk to people, some people who like Chalice Dungeons actually like, again, the superstructure, but most people are just like, I just wanted to control my little Bloodborne guy.
Oh, I really like playing Bloodborne, and playing Bloodborne is moving and doing combat. Yeah.
Yeah. And more Bloodborne is always good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that thing. Like, I think that if it wasn't for the show, I could almost, like, retire from action games. Like, I would be fine just doing turn-based, like, strategy, roguelike, like, light action stuff, and never do a Twitch Bayonetta-like, you know, perfect dodge, high precision game again in my life and be fine.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't, it's not, it doesn't jazz me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the same way I feel like it does other people who are just like, man, it just, it's really arcadey and fun and fast. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. What if you like built a card deck? Like, what if you slowly made decisions that added up to a strategy over the course of many micro decisions?
Yeah.
You know, that sounds fun to me. And I have all the time in the world to make those decisions. Ooh, to lolly.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think I'm a little bit more aligned with fast action than you are, you know, by a slight degree. And for me, it kind of ended up running into the problem of, okay, this is like super fun at like a micro level, but then that feels at war again with the overall structure, where a lot of the interest goes away upon repetition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't do a good job with that, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the individual reasons why. And as like a roguelike guy, there are very specific things.
Yes.
You know, this game obviously worked. It sold really well and it's critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. So me saying I wish it was this way is not me saying it would be objectively better this way. It would just be better for me.
Yeah.
There are changes. There are things that I would do.
Yeah.
Different. I make this work.
I would be asking for a different game, you know?
Yeah.
And asking for a different game on a certain level is not great criticism, actually.
Yeah, it's not really useful, you know, but it is a thing where the reasons this wasn't for me illustrated what would be for me.
Yeah.
In a way that felt personally valuable, and it'll be up to the listener to decide if it's at all valuable to them.
Yeah, I'm going to be really curious to hear you articulate specifically like the particular roguelike rules that it breaks, because I feel like I can feel that to a certain degree. Like I can intuit where this breaks down, but I don't know that I have like the vocabulary or even the examples that I could draw from to illustrate it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into it.
Yeah.
So in this game, you play as a woman, and we're not going to spoil anything because we didn't get far enough to do it. Like, we're going to spoil very minor first act things, but don't worry too much. If you haven't played this, which I imagine a lot of people haven't because PS5 exclusive, this will kind of explain it and you can hear our opinion, but if it sounds cool to you, by all means, pick it up.
Yeah.
So you play as a woman named Celine. This is voiced by Jane Perry, who's the actress who did Diana Burnwood in the Hitman games. She does a great job.
Yep.
You're an astronaut who gets stuck in a time loop on an alien planet. The alien planet is called Atropos, and you're investigating a signal, a mysterious signal.
Yes, you've broken all the rules of Astra, the organization that you're a part of, and gone to this forbidden place, which was forbidden for a reason, you discover, because the game and each of the death loops begins with you crash landing your ship on the planet. Your ship is called the Helios, and you are in this forest that happens to be mixed with these ruins, these Xeno ruins, you know, aliens once lived here. Mm-hmm. And you've got to kind of venture inward to try and find the source of this signal.
Yeah. The reason why this fits in with Souls, the reason why we originally wanted to cover it, you know, it concerns itself with death. Mm-hmm. Different treatments of death, both in the play and the story, which is a Souls thing. You're also presented against a hostile, mysterious and alien place and learn a little bit more.
Yes.
By exploring. When people have tried to sell me on the first, you know, just get through the first act, they compare it to the Undead Burg a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, like, it takes you 10 hours to get past the first act, but then it's like the Undead Burg.
Yeah. Then you get momentum. Then you're going to knock stuff down faster, which I can understand, but...
I can understand. I think that there's a huge difference in genre in terms of avatar progression and like even just having a set place, you know, the Undead Burg, you learn it as you die on it for 10 hours. And that means like learning encounters.
Yeah.
And this game does have encounter design in a way in terms of like enemy mix ups, but it's not that kind of weird, stodgy chess like rhythm, and it's randomized.
Yeah.
No. So it all really comes down to avatar progression differences.
Yeah.
In both in the player and in your actual character.
Yeah, yeah. There is a sense of place mastery that can be achieved here, you know, but it is obfuscated. You know, it's a bang shot toward that feeling, is what it feels like to me. So as I said, the play here is snappy. This is a third person shooter. You move extremely fast. And the enemies, I thought this was super interesting in this, this bought this game several hours of benefit of the doubt and chances here, because I realized, oh, this is like a 3D shmup. The enemies shoot in these bullet hell patterns. You know, you get the spirals, you get the florals and stuff like that. And navigating those is super interesting.
Yeah, I like that. You run really fast. You have a good jump. I love it that they diegetically justify it. Mm-hmm. Like you have a little jetpack that gives you a boost.
Yep.
And then you have this dodge roll kind of sprint thing you can do in the air. You can air dash. You can do it mm-hmm. in any direction.
Yeah.
It's really versatile, and you are invincible in the dodge roll. So that is satisfying and good.
Mm-hmm.
The game is obsessed with risk reward systems.
It is.
In a way that I generally am not super friendly to those. Mm-hmm. I don't love rich get richer, poor get poorer mechanics in a general sense.
Yeah.
So one of the first things, and this is just a taste thing, mm-hmm. But one of the core mechanics of this is you have this adrenaline meter. You kill enemies without taking damage, you get these bonuses up to 5 levels. Once you take damage, it resets.
Yeah.
That is never good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to have to play perfectly, and I don't get a thrill from doing it.
Yeah. If this is a game that I end up liking more than this, obviously, cause I finished it, but it feels really similar to, Cave Story, where taking damage makes makes your weapon directly worse.
Cave Story goes down by steps.
Yeah.
You're constantly being able to like replenish it.
Yeah.
God Hand does a similar thing mm-hmm. as well. Like there are games that do this that I like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never really got a handle on what all the benefits would be.
That's
and
the
what
thing.
They meant.
Yeah.
Like enhanced vision.
I don't know.
What are you talking about? Like the game has a lot of tutorials, but they're not particularly good at explaining like quite a few things. And there are a lot of nouns it throws at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've gotten to like level 5 and it didn't make me feel super powerful or anything. And I can imagine if you're real at this game, like maybe mm-hmm. it does. But for me, it did not.
Yeah, I think that more time spent with this would give you a better ability to discern the marginal improvements that you're getting. It doesn't sell you the benefits while simultaneously making it really sting if you just get hit. It might not do a lot of damage to you, but it is a bit of psychic damage to you, the player.
Yeah. And it very well might do a lot of damage to you as well.
Also.
You start with just a regular pistol. But there are treasure rooms, after they get introduced narratively, I feel like they're guaranteed
mm-hmm.
Early on where you can find new weapons. One of the things that I understand about the later game versus the early game, you're very limited in the weapons you can get
mm-hmm.
early on. There's a rifle and a shotgun.
Yeah.
Basically, my understanding is Biome 2 introduces a lot of fun weapons.
Yeah.
I don't understand that choice. I understand like making things expand, but it was such like the shotgun is a death knell.
Yeah.
To me, you know, it's just like, this isn't going to work because I need to keep distance because all of the big bosses and mini bosses in this do like melee attacks that do so much damage.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot get close to them. Therefore the shotgun is not very good. Therefore I have like basically a 50-50 chance of ending up with a pretty bad weapon in this early game.
Understand that we're savvy enough to understand that the shotgun might have a corner case use that is not apparent to us based on the time that we spent with it.
You get better at dodging the melee attacks.
True.
Like 90% of my deaths in this game were one of the mini bosses melee attacking me while I was dealing with one of the minions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just one-shotting me from like 70% health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to call the shotgun a trap, but then don't yell at me. Like I understand that they might be.
It might be good. It sucked for me.
Yes. Yeah. The way that the weapons articulate are nice, especially given the fact that you can only carry one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no there's no like quick switching or like two slot halo system kind of deal. Each weapon has both a primary fire and an alternate fire. This game uses the PS5's like weird force feedback triggers for that. So you do the primary fire by either firing from the hip or like only halfway pulling the aiming trigger. If you pull the aiming trigger all the way down, that will prime the alternate fire, which is more powerful, And, you know, will generally hit like a wider area or it will home. There are all kinds of, there's a whole variety of effects that can go on there. But there is a cooldown, that is associated with that.
Yes. This is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was surprised by how well, like, the half trigger, full trigger thing works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels really good. You also unlock, alternate fires,
mm-hmm.
and different modes that can be possible on a weapon by using them.
Yeah.
So that is one little bit of avatar progression that carries over. When you empty your gun, so the guns have like an energy rating, basically.
Yeah.
They overload. They'll do it naturally if you just chill out. But if you get down to the bottom, you know, you bottom it out, you have to do a little timeout where you get a little Gears of War.
Yeah.
Timer.
Yeah.
Where if you do the active reload thing, it will cut it. It happens basically instantly.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously, you know, this would work really well if you got good at it.
Yeah.
I was okay at it, but it's a very hectic game with lots of things from lots of angles.
Yeah. It did a good job of getting me to really, really consider, how many shots I had in a clip, you know, to kind of feel that rhythm a little bit more. Because missing this enough times because you are mindlessly, you know, just kind of rapid firing, sucks. It feels bad, you know, so you want to avoid it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, a proficiency system with weapons. You find items called calibrators, that improve your proficiency. The way that you have it in the notes is intuitive. Mm-hmm. The way that the tutorial in the game, at least, talks about proficiency, says it increases the quality of weapons you find.
It's weird.
Not the quality of weapon that you have. So I don't actually know which one is true, because when you find a weapon, they'll have levels to them. And what the tutorial in the game seems to imply is that having high proficiency means you're more likely to find better weapons. But it would make sense also to make your weapons do more damage or make your weapons better, because that's what proficiency means.
Yeah.
I actually don't know which one is real.
I don't know which one is real because I was unclear and I looked and I found descriptions that that implied both. So I don't know what to say. But this is bringing, you know, a certain amount of complication to picking a new weapon. You know, you will find a new one, but if it is in a different type, you know, you may want to consider, am I better off sticking with the one that I have because I have built this up, you know?
Even if not, and that system, I think, at least in the first biome, is undercut by the fact that if rifle, pick up.
Yes.
If not, don't.
Yeah, you want that carbine.
Yeah. Your health is represented by your spacesuit integrity.
Mm-hmm.
You find little bits of glowy stuff called sap that installs it. And then there are heart containers as well called resin. You get enough of those and you'll increase your maximum health.
Yeah.
And there's a cute little currency you get called Ubalites, which sounds like an Xbox exclusive game.
No, it's an Epic exclusive game, the Ubalites. Yeah.
Oh, the Ooblets. Yeah. Epic. Yeah. you can do this at shops. You can spend it at shops for consumables, artifacts, things like that. They spill out of enemies and they disappear like Sonic rings.
Yep.
Which, again, I don't feel like I should ever be close to an enemy in this game.
Yeah.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like a shooter. Like, I know you get a melee attack and we'll talk about that, but it just felt like, you know, there'd be two enemies. I'd kill one of them. He'd spill a bunch of Ubalites. I don't want to run up and get those Ubalites, because if that other enemy decides to tackle me, like, that is just devastating.
Yeah.
You know, so consistently low on money in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I didn't find an awful lot of really great things to spend it on. You get to these stores, these little replicators, and the majority of what you can buy are these consumables. That you get, and, you know, in a game like this where everything is stacked against you, and most of the improvements that you can get are marginal, it would make sense for consumables to be a, you know, pretty big part of this. You know, don't hold on to it.
Yeah.
It's better. It's more useful to you. Use it. Yeah, being used. Also because you can only carry one of them. You know, so you don't want to waste it by picking up something new, right? I found the consumables to be pretty weak honestly.
These fucking suck.
Yeah.
Like, they're so bad. And they tie into this is what you unlock in your meta progression.
Yeah.
Is, you know, getting the consumable when you unlock it and then having it, you know, add to the pool, mm-hmm. dungeon style. But they're all garbage. Like, yeah. You know, I would ones that healed you, I'd be happy with.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, obviously that's useful. But they're all stuff like, you know, creates a one-way shield for 30 seconds.
Yeah. And
that could be useful as a thing, but that would be like a space bar item in Isaac or you know, an active item in Gungeon. It shouldn't be the one consumable you have for the entire fucking run.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, it just makes it feel so bad to use. Like, the ideal use case for that is it makes the difference and you snatch victory from the jaws of defeat fighting a really tough enemy because you use your consumable at the exact right time. What ended up happening instead was I couldn't figure out when the exact right time was and ended up wasting them a lot.
Yeah.
Like, seeing an enemy that's very intimidating, using the consumable, the enemy goes behind a thing and gets an angle on me. So the one-way shield is no longer really useful, and I just threw it away.
Yeah.
And I spent the macro currency, the only consistent currency, like the Ethereum or whatever, Ether, to unlock that. Like, I spent, you know, real time playing the game.
Yeah.
To just unlock this thing that just doesn't feel good at all and did not improve my efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a really bad feeling. That's a roguelike cinema sin right there.
Yeah. Dang.
Ding.
Yeah, the one that I kept on getting was like, hey, this is a shield that will take one hit for you, which can be the difference, right? You know, that'll keep your adrenaline going, etc. However, in a game, at least, where the enemies that I encountered, and especially the boss that we encounter, primarily attacks by spamming, the utility of that didn't feel great to me. It didn't feel like a good value proposition. One hit didn't seem like enough. I can see that number going up as you unlock better things, but the value proposition, it was kind of like unanimously underwhelming.
It's part of the treat deficiency
in
this game. Like, it doesn't feel like a treat.
Slightly
better are artifacts, which are kind of like ring slot kind of things. They give you perks that last for the whole run. These are better. You know, like plus movement speed, stuff like that's always pretty good. Sometimes they tie into these other systems that we'll talk about with parasites and malignancy, which I think are actually not very good systems in this game. When they tie into those, they're a bummer. So you get like an artifact that's like, you know, half the downside of a parasite, and it's like, well, I don't even know if I'm going to find a parasite on this run.
if it's going to be a good one, you know.
One that's worth taking.
This is a very watery synergy that she got for me.
Yes.
There's another currency, you kind of alluded to it. This is ether. This is your hard currency or your sticky currency. It's hard and sticky like a Werther's original or something. So this stays with you even if you die. You know, it accumulates, and you're primarily going to use it to power up alien machines on the planet here on Atropos. And yeah, you want as much of this as you can get, because this is stuff that makes a big deal.
I wanted it to make a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. Like the game language is this should be the best thing that you want.
Yeah.
What it does is it unlocks new consumables at your little shrine in the beginning, which we talked about. And then you use it to cleanse malignancy.
Yeah.
That is spending a permanent currency for something that only affects this run.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to the power up economy thing, where it's like, I don't know if that's going to be a good use of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to just throw away a permanent resource for something that I'm just going to die on the fucking boss. You know, the ideal situation is that makes the difference. That ideal situation didn't happen very often.
Yeah.
For me.
I was very
disappointed in Ether.
I called it a big deal because I primarily used it to power up the reconstructors to give myself an extra life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are things you can do with it that are better.
Yeah.
For sure. But in general, they tend to just affect that run as opposed to the meta, which is more or less non-existent in this game.
Yeah. One of the guaranteed ways to pick this up, like, you know, you can find it in, you know, optional rooms, like off to the side. Sometimes it'll drop off of a tough enemy. The guaranteed way that I could find was to engage with the limited multiplayer system, the Bloodstain system that they have here. Yeah. You will find these energy signatures that show, like, hey, somebody died here. You will see a hologram of their last moments, which will necessarily lead you to their corpse, which you can then activate and then fight kind of within the game itself. This is a previous run of Selene that she doesn't remember. You know, that's worked into the story as well. That's integrated.
You don't fight the, or at least, I mean, maybe again, like neither of us are experts on this. Mm-hmm. I did this a couple times and I didn't fight the other version of me. I did like the avenge option, which I fought the monster that killed the thing.
Yeah.
Like when you get to the corpse, you can either gain ether by avenging it or spend ether to scavenge it. And get their stuff.
Yeah,
so no, I didn't know. I fought no Selenes. I just fought monsters that killed Selenes.
Yeah, I fought Selenes.
I don't know what makes the difference there.
Right, right.
But I always avenged when I did it, and I just fought a tough monster.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and if you scavenge, you get an item that they had when they died.
Yes,
it's a neat way. You know, that is also, you know, it's Soulsy. Other players' deaths working in and affecting your world. And you can also get obelites, or get ether by exchanging your other currency obelites for them at repositories. Yeah. That's just a way, you know, that is a way to also like bank obelites. If you are especially flush, you know,
so we mentioned you unlock, new items at that little doodad in the beginning, Thonos, this little monolith at the beginning. You can also just find them. You'll find these data cubes around in the world. You take them to data cube processors. Mm-hmm. That will also give you a new item. You can only carry one of those at once as well.
Yeah.
The risk reward, you know, obsession of this game continues, with two other power-ups. Parasites are kind of like artifacts, except with a buff and a debuff.
Yeah.
And they're real esoteric.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't find a lot of them that felt like, oh, plus 20% damage, but I take 20% more damage. Like, that would make sense to me. It was a lot of double malignancy from this verb, this noun.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, plus, you know, 10% cooldown on your alternate fire.
Right. It was, here's something about these trade-offs, right? For me, I feel and enjoy these the most when either side of the coin, when both sides of the coin are related to, kind of a single element of play, right? So like, like you said, you deal more damage, but you take more damage. That is classic here. And when I'm evaluating one of these, I think about it like, okay, is this like a super giant game? How much does this feel like Bastion to me?
How much does this remind me of Supergiant?
Yeah.
It better remind me of a Supergiant.
Yeah. I care about taste. Yeah. Care about presentation.
This remind me of Supergiant or like the Tainted Bone Charms and Dishonored?
Yeah.
Like this has a long lineage.
Yes. Yeah. I just Supergiant is like the king of these kinds of trade-offs, right?
Yeah.
You know, which it, you know, it kind of communicate to you a style of play to make it feel meaningful, you know, and help you kind of judge how this is going to affect your run or if it's a good fit for you, either for your skills or your current loadout. Things like that. This is something that's real good in Hades, right? Here I'm not feeling it because the upside and downsides of these parasites are not necessarily related. They both feel like they're kind of pulled from unrelated randomizer tables.
Yeah, I don't like them. Most of the time I did not pick them up. And they're rare. Like, it's not like you're guaranteed to get them or anything. You know, many runs I went through, I just didn't find any.
Yeah.
So it just made finding them and then having them not be worth picking up just, you know, again, feel bad. Like, no game retreats.
Yeah, yeah. The cutscene where you get your first one is real cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's gross. Yep. Good bio horror shit.
Uh-huh.
Malignancy. So the other risk reward thing in this is malignancy. You'll find treasure chests or different objects or stacks of oobleite or whatever. They're infected with this thing called malignancy. You know, analogous to curse. You know, or something like that in Gungeon. Mm-hmm. These give you penalties, and then you have a way to burn them off. So you and they're real, again, very esoteric, and felt like I just wasn't going to run into them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to open this chest that has a high chance of malignancy. I get the malignancy. I get a garbage consumable from the chest.
Yep.
Like, I make a 30-second one-way shield.
Yeah.
I get a malignancy that's like collect 3 resins,
mm-hmm.
or until you do it, you know, it's plus, you know, your alt fire takes this much longer to charge. You have this much less ammo or something.
Mm-hmm.
The downside was always felt very crushing to me.
Yeah.
And the way to get exercise, the malignancy always felt too much, or like something that I had no control over whether I'd even have access
mm-hmm.
to those things, to where I just ignored.
Yeah.
These, like, if it was malignant, I didn't go for it. And I didn't want to spend my permanent currency to cleanse malignancy because, again, I'm just going to die. So what good is that?
Right.
You know, can't take it with you.
Nope. I don't think I'm going to beat the game on this run, guys. So,
yeah. Or even beat the boss on this run.
Yeah.
You know, so I did not like this mechanic.
Yeah.
Personally,
I liked this less than parasites. Parasites, you get the information. Malignancy is always a gamble, explicitly.
Yeah.
The rewards that I got didn't necessarily make it feel like it was worth throwing the dice.
Yes. Yeah. You can have multiple lives. You have Aether at the Reconstructor, which you mentioned before. There's also a little astronaut figurine you can get. They'll give you an extra life.
Mm-hmm.
Each level, it is randomized. Mm-hmm. There are room shapes that get kind of snapped around and connected. And there is a main path and then a side path.
Yeah.
Where you find hard encounters or treasures, like just kind of random rooms or shops,
mm-hmm.
things like that. You can look at the map and see which one is which.
Yeah.
This is this might feel like a small ball complaint, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
The rooms in this are too big.
Okay.
It felt like Metroid Prime to me sometimes. Like, I would clear all the monsters and then just get this wave of exhaustion about clearing the room.
Yeah.
In part because I didn't have the movement upgrades and stuff that you eventually get that probably make that more fun.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it just had this weird feeling of like, okay, like, and it tied into the roguelike nature and the running in place nature, because if I was doing that and that was the only time I had to go through that room, mm-hmm. fine. Like, I'm in a lock and key style, you know, Metroid Prime game. I'm going to clear out this room so I can move on.
Yeah.
Just the knowing that I very well could just be running into a, you know, an effective duplicate of that room after that, and then just have to do it again. And then after I die, have to do both of them again, was like powerfully demoralizing to me. It made me really appreciate the room setups in something like The Binding of Isaac.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, limited in scope. Like, there are big rooms in that,
mm-hmm.
But they're rare.
Yeah. Yep. So. The lack of the space mastery in this is that's an ingredient that I like, and I feel its absence strongly. And I understand, like, the actual, like, rhythm of a biome is roughly the same, you know, like, okay, there would be like a couple of combat arena rooms with some optional stuff off to the side before I got to the point where I had to use the transmitter, right? Use the teleporter to get, you know, to get over this chasm. Right. You know, and then you would hit those things roughly in the same order, and like the details in it would change. That said, though, like the individual the fact that the individual rooms were so anonymous was a bummer to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not like them.
Mm-hmm.
There's fast travel within a run that used a backtrack to either like shops and stuff you missed or to go back to the critical path.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole experience is pretty long.
Yes.
The first biome, like, I think there are only 4 biomes in the game, so like it makes sense that it would be this long and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But when you die on the boss, starting over with nothing, it is a devastating feeling.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
I did not feel like, oh man, I can't wait to get another crack at that guy, which I would if there were like a bonfire outside the door, like a video game. But instead, the fact that I have to go through this thing that I very well could die on, like I'm not, I haven't mastered the level. And I understand that's the point.
Yeah.
You do this, you do shallow runs on this first biome enough to where you can get to the boss with enough health and consistently enough to practice him.
Yeah.
And do well at that. I just didn't. That just wasn't fun for me.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I got to the point where I didn't really feel like the stuff I was repeating was something I was being tested on, you know, because, you know, the thing I was failing, you know, the test I was failing was the thing I was trying to get to master it, right? And so the repetition that led up to it, it did not feel additive to me.
And well, and on the way to the test I was failing, there were tests I did not care to pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it, if that makes sense, like there are a lot of mini bosses in this game. You're not very rewarded very much for fighting them. And they uniformly come with like a dozen adds.
Yeah.
They're really annoying encounters to me. And like, yes, I, you know, it is possible to get good at those and get better at them. I just, it didn't make sense for my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's something we talk about when we're evaluating any other Souls-like, you know, is the length of the bonfire run. Like, that is a huge axis on which we judge these games and the way they design their space and pace, you know? And here, effectively, you've got like Demon Souls, you know, like what if you had to do two whole areas of Demon Souls without a bonfire kind of pacing?
It's all 2-2.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, so let's talk about aesthetics because we both have issues with this that are similar.
Yeah.
It's a good looking game in that it's pretty, you know, frame rate looks good. It's got a lot of nice like rendering and everything. Like it's a pretty looking game.
Yeah.
You know, it feels current gen.
Yes, it is. It is impressive. They're using the hardware. This is 4K. It's smooth. You got all kinds of particle effects here. You got all kinds of textures and stuff. And anybody who has heard the Bloodborne season will understand this complaint. This comes at the expense of readability. There's a clutter problem here. Both spaces and enemies are covered with flowing stuff, tentacles and hair and moss.
Everything's a cape.
Yeah.
Oops, all capes.
Yeah. Kind of in constant motion that is obscuring silhouettes and obscuring movement. And those are things that are super important, especially in a game that is playing like a shmup in certain points where movement, you know, discerning movement and patterns is super important.
Yeah. I need to, well, specifically I need to read melee attacks.
Yes.
because they made the decision again. I keep complaining about them, but they made them absolutely devastating.
Yes.
And when, especially with the mini boss enemies that are just kind of these, they look, like the enemies to me, they kind of look like the bad guys in Eternals or something. They're not good looking monsters.
Yeah.
You know, which is an aesthetic concern just generally, like they're so full of flowing particle effects and glowing neon that I can't see a cool monster design in them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's a bummer, but it ends up also meaning I don't know when they're going to attack because they're blinding me with neon and glow.
Yes.
You know, the big, big mini boss guys that when they do their big leap, like, yeah, you can see that that has a really clear wind up. The little guys little tackle that they do has a much less clear wind up.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking quick. And it's just hard to see what the, like them crouching to prepare for it.
Yeah. Again, with more time, you would learn to read this, right? You would be able to discern those edges, and you know the noise would filter away to, you know, to signal as you tap into it. That said, I think that it is a problem of design, and if it is not initially, you know, readable, right? That to me is not something that you should like necessarily have to get used to. When it feels like a trade-off, like I like when things are pretty. I like pretty things, Gary.
But to me, this got in the way of the prettiness because I wanted to look at cool monster designs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and maybe there are later ones that are super cool. Like my understanding is the biome changes and gets more colorful. Like everything people tell me is that this game gets really interesting once you get past this first part.
Sell early. Which, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, sell early, please. Don't.
This is such a and it might've made the difference, right? Like even like putting the cool weapons in biome one might've been the difference between this episode and then like a 2-episode thing that describes the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
What is neat, like their aesthetic touches I think are great.
Mm-hmm.
I love like the first time you walk over all the corpses of the aliens.
It's so good.
You know, they're built in the floor, they look great. There's all these cyclopean like statues of these aliens that have like horned gods.
Mm-hmm.
They look like it's really neat.
Yeah.
That stuff whips.
Yeah. The atmosphere in general is really good. This place feels oppressive and hostile and worn down and alien, you know, specifically, right? Even if it ends up being like a little monotone, there's promise here because they're showing a certain amount of taste in what they're doing. And the story that we're getting here, you know, story is part of aesthetics, right? Mm-hmm. The story that I saw was really neat. You know, like mm-hmm. Celine is making elliptical comments to herself, implying mystery that I want to get to the bottom of, specifically the idea that she has been here for longer than you think. And you're finding extremely longer. Yeah. And you're finding other versions of yourself that are very clearly in a different set of mind. In a different state of mind, you know, crazier, more religious, more apocalyptic, more hopeless, things like that.
Yes.
Extremely
everything
good.
With the house.
Oh, the house is so good.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, like, I want to see more.
I want to see more of it so bad. I just don't want to play this game to do it.
Yep.
All that stuff is fascinating,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just, to me, it is a testament to the lack of fun that I'm having that both the, you know, the zip zap movement and then also how compelling this stuff wasn't enough to draw me forward.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me, it's like a unique thing of gaming now and gaming at this age where like if I were younger
mm-hmm.
and stuck with this, I think that finding out what happened would be a huge drive. The fact that I can just read it whenever I want, I haven't mm-hmm. done that yet. I haven't spoiled it because I think I'm still going to poke at this.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's just available
mm-hmm.
is a powerful deterrent for me.
Yeah.
Like I can find out that mystery just fine. And like, yes, I always say like, yes, that's not the ideal way to experience it. But mm-hmm. if the alternative is nothing, it's better than nothing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Agreed. So I just, I understand that there's cool stuff here. It hints at it super well and super deftly. I just wish that the friction was something I could get over.
Yeah. Please don't tell us the cool stuff that happens.
Please.
like I said, I would like to poke at this.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning to poke it, do a couple of runs last night to prepare for this. Mm-hmm. But then I did the roguelike mod of Inscription instead, which is, you know, I'm in a mode for comfort and that shit is Gary Knapp. This is made by a company called Housemarque, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know about these guys.
Yeah.
But apparently they've been around for a very long time.
Yeah. Old PC developer. They made a popular DOS kind of Robotron-like called Stardust. Mm-hmm. I first became aware of them when they did the HD remake of that. Super Stardust HD, which was kind of like the PS3's answer to Geometry Wars before that went multi-platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this game changed in its development.
Yeah.
Originally this was going to be closer to what they had done before, like kind of their previous shooters, but the presentation was very strong and Sony decided to give them money.
Yeah.
So they made a much bigger game,
mm-hmm.
For this. Yeah. And it is true a PS5 game,
mm-hmm.
Not just exclusive, but it takes advantage of all the PS5 stuff.
Yes. You know, down to and including that, the haptic feedback, built into the controllers, which I am warming up to. I don't know if we mm-hmm. talked about this in the Demon Souls episode, but anytime a trigger gives resistance, I feel like I'm breaking it.
Yeah. I'm sure we talked about the haptic feedback in that. Cause it shows up a little bit in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is way more
mm-hmm.
like this is much more powerful and more pronounced.
Yeah. And it is a good part of the play. Like this makes a really good case for that, for the haptic feedback. So when Returnal was initially shown, kind of in the big reveal of like, hey, this is what's going to be coming to the PS5, the reception was pretty muted, I think, just because, I mean, the name's kind of goofy.
It's got a dumb name, and it's a full-priced, full-featured product that is a roguelike from a developer not a lot of people have heard. Like, I had sticker shock when this...
Yeah.
When people started recommending this to me, and I was like, $70.
Holy shit.
You know, it's on sale a lot. I think I spent $45.
Yeah.
On it. But it there was that reception, but it has gotten legs. It reviewed really well. It's a lot of people's game of the year. You know, big splash a lot of time, you know, and who knows how much of that is, chalked up to there just not being a lot to do on the PS5.
Yep.
You know, specifically things that are exclusive. But it's interesting, you know, this game was the one we just, you know, recording this in February for people in the future. Game of the Year discussions have just recently wrapped up for 2021. It's interesting to play this and Inscription back to back, which were the two names I saw the most.
Yes.
In terms of a game and Loop Hero, which I was just playing for fun. Those are like the three games I heard.
You know,
were Game of the Years.
Loop Hero is good.
Yeah. Loop Hero is really good. Out of those three, Inscription's my favorite.
Of course.
Not in small part because it like can be a forever game, like a roguelike, but also it has a structure and an ending way that I like.
Yeah.
But yeah, big game.
Let's get into it. Let's talk about the Overgrown Ruins biome, which is about as far as we both got. We both bounced at the same point. Then we'll leave it off there.
Before we completely get into the weeds, about that, two things I want to say that are general, just so I don't bring them up every time they pop up.
Okay.
In this, one is that, when I talked about this failing as a roguelike, it is entirely an avatar progression, right? So the fact that, the run I do now, what I take into the next run is almost exclusively just things I learned. There's no avatar strength for it. That is actually incredibly important in roguelikes. And I think that even in roguelikes that are considered very hard, it's a bigger deal than it seems like, you know, it can feel like running in place when you get a party wipe in Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah.
For example, but having the Hamlet there, like you spent money and you got, you know, you have permanent upgrades, like your next run will be easier. And that continues to happen. Same thing with Gungeon, same thing with Isaac. Like they're good at that. Those games also, to balance that, when you don't have that, you have a slot machine that you add. So Isaac, even though once you die on a run, you know, early on you're going to unlock stuff, but maybe you unlock something that's not that great. But the next time you play, you're pulling on a lever and you might get something that gives you a little bit of an edge. So you get a little bit further. So you unlock a little bit more and you get that, like that positive coefficient.
Yes.
You know, kind of loop. That is not extant in this game.
No,
it's entirely player skill. And just like, it's like practicing a fighting game or something. That is not like, that is a way that video games work, but it's not a way that roguelikes typically work.
Yes.
The other thing is, I think that there is a real tension between, the arcadey shooter, roguelike part of this and the lock and key based progression and upgrade Metroidvania that is somewhere in this. To where early on in runs, you're unlocking very basic verbs that should be there from the start. It has that Makiri counter issue. Like there's no reason to not let you do melee until you stumble across that encounter. My understanding is you get a grappling hook that allows you to get to these high places that they keep putting items I can't get to. You should have found that earlier. Like I don't think it's gaining anything from making you simultaneously play two games at once. Like, oh, I have to go get the red chthonic key to get into this boss chamber. So I have to go into this little side diverticula. Oh, I can't get through that unless I have a melee attack. So I have to go through this other one. Like you're kind of playing Metroid Prime, but you're just doing the first level of it over and over and over. It's really weird. Like there's a fundamental tension in this game. Between those two things.
I feel that too.
Future Gary here.
Future Cole here. Everything's worse.
Okay, it doesn't get better. Real quick note, we forgot to bring up augments for guns.
Yeah.
A couple people pointed this out. I appreciate that. It is something that we both ran into while playing. We just forgot to mention it in the episode because it didn't have too big of an impact on my success or experience. But my understanding is it's very important to the meta, and it's very important to late game success. It did not affect the early game for me.
No.
I noticed them. I would get certain gun upgrades and everything like that. I don't think that system's super well communicated, actually, but you know, I did notice it. It just didn't make a difference for me. So not telling anyone they're wrong when they say that's the important thing or that's what makes a difference. It's just an error of omission, not an error of not running into it. When
an error of intent or an error of neglect, let's say. I think I mentioned different ways that guns can be modified in the notes there, but early on, again, that is not communicated. Also, like, I was not, you know, I didn't get one that made all of the difference for me, right? And you know, it wasn't like a pickup that I had been trained to really to really look forward to or seek out or hope for. And that early in the game, like a lot of things that might ultimately end up, you know, being a bigger swing in your favor later on as you get acclimated to the game and as they feel comfortable giving you better toys. Early on in the game, it is a disappointingly marginal advantage, at least in the way that it feels. Yeah. So it's just something that is the reason why it wasn't necessarily played up as much as I think people were expecting it to be.
Yeah, and I also get that that's the meta progression. You unlock new possibilities for gun things.
Yeah.
The ones that I unlocked in my time with the first thing were not good. I didn't unlock anything that was fun.
Yeah.
For me.
Yep.
So just wanted to throw that in there because it is a major system in the game. Also, someone corrected me and said there are more than four biomes. I don't know where I got four from. I think I was just a nice round number. I didn't know how many it was.
Yeah. So it's an unusual episode for us. It's an unusual approach to an unusual game. We wanted to make sure that we, you know, since we kind of missed those things, wanted to make sure that we were as thorough as possible with the stuff that was there.
So thanks, everybody, and enjoy the episode. So Celine, in the beginning of this, she's flying her ship down to the surface of this like stormy planet. Her computer tells her that the approach is forbidden. A big light up thing just goes forbidden, which made me laugh. And she's looking for something called the White Shadow Transmission or the White Shadow Broadcast.
Yes. As she is approaching the surface, lightning strikes her ship and sends it into a spiral. She crashes down kind of in this forest. It totals her ship. She cannot depart. She wakes up on the ground. She's been thrown clear. And she radios to Astra, which we learn is, you know, kind of like her NASA that she works for.
Yeah.
Saying like, hey, I'm alive, but Helios is not. You know, she's going to abandon Helios, her ship, you know, to explore this place, Atropos, which immediately everything, Selene, Astra, Helios, Atropos, it's all mythology.
It's all real clever. You know, writers cannot resist doing this shit. If you can name something after a Greek something, you do it.
Yep.
So you go into the ruins and, you know, the first little bit of intrigue, if you didn't know the premise of the game at all, this would be real cool. You find another scout and it turns out you find yourself.
Yeah.
You pick up your own gun from the past. You're going to start with it from now on, making an open time loop kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we're introduced to the combat. There aren't very many enemies in this first biome. These regular enemies, these little leaping guys that shoot out the spread shot, I generally like.
Yeah.
I don't like when there are seven of them added to a mini boss. But just a room full of these guys, I think, presents a fun challenge.
They compound on each other in a neat way.
Yeah. Their spreads overlap in ways that are like interesting and emergent.
Yeah.
After you kill them, you find another one of your own bodies. And this has an audio log you don't remember recording about how this place rearranges itself and turns into this maze, how that version of you was stuck. So, you know, you're something's up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We get the air dash tutorial here, kind of giving us our little kind of almost double jump. There's another log describing there's this moment between death and rebirth when tentacles drag me down, screaming, gasping, returning. You might not have died yet.
Yeah.
So yeah. Getting a little you bit of a preview haven't. Here.
Like, yeah. This is very early on.
Yeah.
So we're fighting those little wolf dudes who shoot the spread shots generally. Mm-hmm. There are also tentacles that hang from the sky, like in Half-Life.
Mm-hmm.
Those little things, and you use those as an elevator.
Yeah.
Very funny. To get up to places. Yep. You can get up to some high up locations that way. Other ones you cannot. They're little orange nodes that I presume you use your grappling hook for. Mm-hmm. There are also force fields and plant vines you cannot get through. Because you have to get your melee weapon first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you're going, like, I love the mapping system in this game. I think it's really useful. You know, it is presented well. You know, the critical path will always have, I believe it's the rectangular doors shown there.
Yes.
The other
triangles
ones
are optional.
Yeah. Triangles are optional and they're color coded. Like red ones are always like a challenge arena, that kind of thing. You're going to be taking like little side paths here. So like, you know, I went off of one of them and found the reconstructor. You know, these are like big stone devices with humanoid imprints on them. I didn't have ether to power them, but this is where, you know, you will bank some ether. You'll use it in order to respawn, should you die in the future.
Yeah. It's also worth noting, in addition to those rooms, how did you feel about the game's equivalent of Mimics, where it's like just in any regular room, there'd be a treasure. And if you pick it up, you fall through the floor into a zone.
I was fine with it once I learned that that's what that is. You know, you see the yellow thing at the bottom there. And it's weird because usually when I fell down there, it wasn't like into a more difficult encounter. It was like, oh, this is just a way for it to kind of hide treasure rooms mostly.
It's both, which is the thing I didn't like about it.
Yeah.
The optional doors, you know, they don't tell you in the map key what color corresponds to what. You're supposed to remember. So you go through a red door and you're like, oh shit, that's where there's going to be like a boss trap room.
Yeah.
You can fall through those little pits and just end up in a boss trap room as well.
Yeah.
I don't understand the idea behind having them both, you know, because one rewards knowledge and like you opt into it. The other one is just kind of, again, like a random pull on the lever, but in the bounding box of this game, the bads were really bad and the goods were not that good.
Yeah.
In terms of what I could get. So the whole thing ended up making me feel very risk averse.
Yeah.
To those things. Once I figured it, like the first time I went down there and a mini boss killed me down there, I just was like, okay, well, fuck those. You know, here's another part of the game I'm not going to engage with because it's not worth it because it feels, the feel bads are too big.
Yeah. Yeah. And like conservative is not your general stance that you want to take in a roguelike. That doesn't feel good. Mm-mm. You know, like you want to like take risks and then be forced into a situation where you are assuming a conservative position, hoping that your possibilities open back up for you, you know.
And one reason why you take risks is because of meta progression.
Yes.
Like I go and take, and that even applies to non-roguelike things. So like putting this in the Souls context, a reason why you might take a risk and go into an area that is very hostile is that you have that permanent avatar progression. Like anything you pick up, you'll keep.
Yeah.
You know, this just doesn't have that and could use it. So it ended up being very discouraging.
Yeah.
To doing fun things.
Mm-hmm. I had too much to lose.
Yeah. You know, and it's time. You know, it's time and frustration, right?
Yes. Like
not everybody cares about the sand that's falling through the hourglass of their life as much as I do.
Right.
But it's not just that. It also just wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just like, this is going to take another hour. It's going to take another not very fun hour.
Yeah.
You know, do I want to do a chore? You just did the dishes. Do you want to dirty them up and do them again? You know, if you pull this lever, there's a 70% chance it's just going to dirty up all your dishes again.
Yeah.
Do you want to pull the lever? But if you have a 30% chance of getting a 30-second shield that goes one way, you can only use it once. You know,
I wonder how many people would look at the games that play differently if instead of sitting in a comfortable chair and playing them on a big screen, you had to play them in a closed coffin.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, or like the Oculus Dish. It's like a game you play by washing your dishes and go on the yard work simulator.
Yep. Yeah. Oh God. So the signal that you're following takes you first into your first weapon pickup room. Mm-hmm. There is like a weapon that is like a carbine sitting on this altar. You know, we've seen that you've been around here. The weapons here are mimicking ours, as kind of the conclusion that she jumps to, like, oh, this looks like, you know, an Astra rifle. And you pick it up and it's a carbine. So it's going to be the weapon you're going to want to use here until you get those fabled good weapons later on.
Long range and good ammo.
Yeah.
Yeah. The signal has this massive chasm that we can't pass. If we're following the signal, we can't do that. So we're going to reroute, check out this energy reading in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And we find another audio log here. Selene asks, like, who activated this signal? Mm-hmm. You know, she is the only person who knows what "do you see the white shadow" means.
Yeah.
So imagine like if you had a secret that only you knew, mm-hmm. and then you got a radio broadcast that just said the secret to you.
Right.
Like that is a cool and compelling hook.
Mm-hmm. looking here, they're not referring to the 70s TV show, The White Shadow.
Oh, yeah. I wish that they were.
I really wish it was.
Stealth reboot. Yeah. Imagine.
Yep. Yeah. I remember that coming on a Nick at Night. It was about basketball. I was not interested. But yeah, super tantalizing. That's kind of why she had to break all the rules, you know, to come here to learn the
forbidden.
Yeah. To learn the answer to this mystery. Right. We come across a strange device that creates this blue sphere of light. We need the Xeno technology to activate it. Again, another lock that we need a key for. This ultimately will be like a transporter kind of deal.
Yeah. Beyond there, we there's a place where you fall through the floor scripted, and we find an alien corpse that has a mod on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this allows us to use the teleporters. Once we pop it onto our suit,
mm-hmm.
teleports us back up and over the chasm closer. We introduced a new enemy here in this next zone, which are the turrets.
Mm-hmm.
These are good enemies, except for when they're shielded, because you don't get melee, which is how you get through shields.
Yep.
They're such a pain in the ass when you don't have a way to deal with them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just again, poor get poorer. Like,
yeah.
You know, eventually this will be fine, but early on, you're just going to die a lot to getting shot in the back while
you're dealing with something beyond
this.
Yeah it's a temporary setback, but it is not a satisfying one, I guess. Any room that is big enough to have them, especially at this chasm one here, has flying enemies called Strixeras. These are kind of like big, kind of almost like formless jelly-like things that when they bunch up, they will fire these powerful energy beams at you. So mm-hmm. you want to, you know, kind of use your shots in order to keep them apart as you're kind of burning them off.
Yeah. We get a store here, which is a replicator. We stick in ubelets to get bad consumables. We also start like the translation
mm-hmm.
game of this. We find a stone, these xenoglyphs, which you slowly, like, your character learns the language of this slowly. And these are permanent as well. These carry over.
Yeah. I like this system. I like that both this and your codex describing enemies or bosses, as you learn more things, it develops. I think each of them has like three levels of kind of understanding. The mm-hmm. sentences get longer and more specific, but also, you know, as you're spending more time here and Selene's state of mind deteriorates, they start getting more elliptical, weird, and apocalyptic, you know, mm-hmm. more like fixated on religious themes and stuff. Again, super tantalizing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is around when your little consumable unlocker in the beginning opens up, the Kathonos. And then this is also around where you run into the farmhouse, Mm-hmm. You're just kind of going through this spooky alien biome, and there's just a farmhouse sitting in the middle of it. Perfect as day. Yeah. This is great. This got me really excited.
Uh-huh.
Like, I was just like, oh shit. Like, you and I both have talked about that mixing, you know, things like The Ritual, movie where, like, you know, the convenience store that's outside,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's great.
Yeah.
That is a surreal image that always works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's weirded out. We can't get in there yet, but eventually we can get in there and explore it. And I was really excited for this.
Mm-hmm. Goes into first
this
person.
This is the coolest thing that happened to me in the game.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. Give me this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, you walk inside, you know, after you find the key and come back here, you walk inside and, like, there are photos of Celine as an astronaut. And her comments kind of imply that this is not chronologically possible. You know, she was not working for Astra when she would have lived here, you know, so you get a sense of, like, two separate lives that are being lived.
Yeah. Yep. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
You eventually you get upstairs and you find this, like, toy block, and you look out the window and you see an astronaut just in space. Then you fall down. The door opens, the lights flood out, and now we're inside the house, but it's all rotted away.
Yeah.
And we get our first astronaut figurine.
Yeah.
Which is a spare life.
It's super valuable. And the fact that you're going to have your first doomed encounter with the boss with this means that you mm-hmm. are going to waste it.
Yeah. It is a wasted consumable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause you're not going to beat the boss on the first try. Just poor get poorer.
Yep. So after this, broadly, you do end up finding some new enemies, like, instead of, you know, the mini bosses, instead of just being, like, corrupted, harder versions of regular enemies, you start getting these, Titanops and Micamorphs. The Titanops are the melee ones specifically, you know, like bipedal guys who will do these just really, really poorly telegraphed dash moves. Yeah.
Yep. These kill me more than anything else. They never appear alone.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do the video game thing where they appear alone to teach you their patterns.
Yeah.
They appear in a room with tons of other guys shooting bullet hell at you.
Yeah.
So you end up with that thing where sometimes you'll die. You won't even really see why you died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time this killed me, it just got me from behind. You have a little marker around your suit that glows in the direction of a threat here. That is good, and that's mandatory for a third person shoot 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to pay attention to in this game.
Yes.
So, like, as much as that is a kindness and makes it possible, I don't feel like that was something where it's like, oh, just look at the thing, dummy. Like, well, I was looking at lots of things.
Yeah.
It happened very quickly.
There are lots of glowing things. There's a lot to read here. Yeah.
Everything fucking glows, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, the mini boss I like more are the Micomorphs.
Yes.
I think these are more interesting in terms of design and visually and play-wise.
Yeah. It's real subtle, but the wiki confirms this because they look more humanoid than other stuff that you fought so far. These are mm-hmm. Celine's old bodies. You know, so she dies and she leaves these husks everywhere, and the local fungi take it over and corrupt it, and they walk around and kind of, instead of dealing a lot of direct damage to you, they make you more vulnerable to other things. They kind of spit out this slowing goo that kind of floats in the air that will kind of lock you down a little bit, make it so you can't really dodge stuff that's coming at it.
Yeah. Like these guys quite a bit. They teleport around as well.
Yeah.
So we're running into an energy wall we can't get through on the critical path. We go the other way. There's a dead end. There's an inactive teleportation device we cannot use, but we can find a dead robot here that gives us our melee weapon.
Yes, the Atropian Blade.
Atropian Blade.
Yeah.
It's a lightsaber,
mm-hmm.
Basically. It does a lot of damage to enemies, which mm-hmm. is good, because if you're getting close to them, you're, you know, in a lot of danger. And it'll bust down vines and red barriers.
Yes. So there have been, in some rooms, like little treasure caches you've not been able to get to. Mm-hmm. With these, some of them you're able to, like, get the vines or the bars to recede by finding a like a glowing box that you shoot, you know, just kind of hidden there. This will let you open up more of those which ends up making making further runs a little bit easier. Yeah.
And chunks of Oobalite.
Yes.
They're like these things, and the dreaded malignant Oobalite. This allows, having all this stuff means we can get to the end of this biome. Right. To fight the end boss of this, which we fall down a gigantic pit, to fight this guy named Frike.
Yeah. Lanky four-armed dude. He has a cool looking diamond shaped head with like a bite taken out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of like, yeah. So this is a three phase boss fight. All the bosses in the game are three phases.
Yeah.
That's my understanding. And the first two phases of this, I'm pretty much okay with.
I got through the first two phases on my first try with the astronaut. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not so bad. He shoots these red dot projectiles, these orbs he throws in the sky that kind of fall down on you in different, in kind of different patterns, and machine gun blasts, which are fine.
Yeah. Once you figure out the color coding on them, it's real clear how you're supposed to react to these. The thing is, he gets faster in future phases. You know, it's manageable in the second one. By the time you get to the third phase, you get a lot of these that are overlapping each other. And the death knell for this, the thing that always got me because I could not find a way to get around it, is his beam attack, which is effectively a melee.
Yeah, he does a beam and then it transitions into a melee.
Yes.
What this means is that each of those individual attacks does not one shot you, but together they do. And they happen effectively. It's doing the souls like thing of, if you don't dodge the first one, you have it. You don't dodge the second, they're chained.
Yeah.
So effectively one attack that one shots you.
Yeah.
This is just, and the other parts, like I was fine with the overlapping bullet hell stuff.
Yes.
Like, I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. It's a weird, like, if you took melee attacks away from enemies in this game, like, that would basically do it.
Yeah.
Because that's how I died. Like, it's how I died every time. Mm-hmm. They do so much fucking damage. They're really hard to telegraph, and you're looking at so many things.
You really are. Yeah.
He does the blade thing, the wave beam into melee transition, while you are... In the third phase, while you are dodging upwards of three overlapping attacks that he has like sat and forgot.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah.
And then you die and you get back to the beginning and there's no guarantee I'm going to get back.
Right.
It's going to take a long time to get there. Mm-hmm. I might get there with a shotgun. fuck me then.
Yeah.
It's miserable. Like, I was so miserable.
You know, and because of that space, again, you know, a tight iteration loop is, beneficial because you remember more, it's not just the frequency, like, okay, I'm doing this more in a shorter amount of time so I can develop the muscle memory for this faster. But like, I don't know, man, I might die making a mistake that I didn't realize exactly how it was a mistake. And then I get back to it and I realize, oh, I just died to the same thing. And I didn't remember to keep an eye out for that because I had paid attention to too many other things in between. Yeah. I may be making myself sound like a simpleton, but I assure you it was a problem for me.
Yeah, it's a lot, and it's also a thing where I would get to this boss with a reasonable consumable, and almost beat him and feel kind of pumped, and then the next run get garbage. This consumable decreases the effects of malignancy by 30%. Fuck off. I get to the shop because there's always a shop. It's static.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to buy from this were healing items.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I need Estus. Like, we didn't talk about, this game does not have an Estus or anything like that.
Yeah.
There's no static healing. And that wouldn't be for sale.
Yeah.
Or I would not have made enough money, and I didn't make enough money because I ended up fighting a lot of mini bosses. And if you get close to him, one of the ads, while the mini boss is still there, he one shots you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just like, I'm not here on this earth to not have fun.
Right.
And fun can be a lot of different things. Like, you and I both like horror games and depressing psychological games and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That is fun.
Yes.
To us. This just wasn't fun to me. mm-hmm. In any kind of fun.
This experience. Really. And it might be, yeah. you know, you get past it and then you can look back at it, look back on it and laugh, you know?
Yeah.
I, you know, I'm not there. Didn't get there. And yeah. I couldn't have gotten there. Not by the time we recorded here, and maybe not by the time we recorded the next one, you know?
Yeah. And maybe won't get there.
Yeah.
You know, like this might be the thing where like, this might be one of those games where I believe everyone when they say it's incredible, but mm-hmm. I just did other stuff instead.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to have to be fine.
Yep.
You know, it just, it's not something, one of the things, you know, so we're doing this before we get into, two things. Like next episode, we're going to be talking about the Nightfall demo.
Yes.
The Nightfall demo is friendlier than the Daughters of Ashmod.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's better balanced in that. Elden Ring is an RPG.
Yep.
You do gain stats and stuff. Miyazaki's in an interview. He's like, more people are going to finish this.
Yes.
I'm really excited for both of those news. Yep. We might be reaching the end of a tunnel where people are like, let's ease up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what? We can chill on this.
We may have gone too far this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe there's something we can do to make this game interesting that isn't just brutal difficulty.
Yeah.
You know, I assure you there is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe things are coming back around to us.
Yeah.
And I really hope they are.
I hope so too.
You know, watch the first boss of Elden Ring be like Orphan of Kos. And just
like, fuck you, know, you. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, and then just, we just go, well, fuck us, I guess. And we go live on an island or something.
Understand that our posture going into this is one of hope, is one of wanting it to be good.
Tons of hope.
For anybody who is like, these guys hate everything because they want to hate everything. I didn't mean to do a stupid voice for that. But, you know, that is a frustrating take to see about our analysis. I want it to be good.
Yeah.
I want it to be a good fit.
Yeah. And I was really looking forward to this and was chomping at the bit for an excuse to play it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard so many good things, both in person from, you know, Will and Jeremy, mm-hmm. you know, friends of mine, and then also just reading from people I respect and like,
yeah,
who are just like, this is really incredible, and it just did not land.
Sick burn on Will and Jeremy.
Oh, what did
you
I
know?
Say?
Oh, no, I just, like, I heard about it, you know, from Will and Jeremy, then I read about it from people I respect and like.
Oh.
It, I understand
what you
mean.
I called Will and Jeremy friends.
Yeah.
That's better than people I respect on Twitter. Yeah. Like, you'd be amazed how few people I respect on Twitter. It's not a good platform for respecting people.
No, it yeah. it's a like harsh.
Michael Cooperman and Dan Bachner and like roughly it.
And yeah, I just it, yeah, I did not think you said that. It was a funny thing to hear.
Yeah, the yeah, and yeah, it's both of them. It's also worth noting that both Jeremy and Will were both like, I don't know if you're gonna like it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't listen. I should have.
Yeah.
So hopefully this wasn't frustrating to you as a listener. Mm-hmm. I imagine you're either somebody who is on the fence about playing this or doesn't have a PS5 and you're just learning about a game, or you're somebody who already likes this game and hopefully this felt respectful and you can respect somebody having a different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and next episode we're talking about Nightfall, which is an unqualified recommendation from both of us.
Mm-hmm.
It fucking slaps.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking about that. And then after that is, Elden Ring. So,
wild.
You can't believe it's already here. It's one of those things where like denying myself the hype has allowed it to kind of sneak up, you know?
Yeah. It feels like it's been about to come out for a long time.
Yeah.
So the first episode, that'll be a first impressions episode, mm-hmm. which will be a little like necessarily slight. That is to give us time to play and beat it.
Yeah, and plan out the season, etc.
Yep.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to playing that with all of you. Yeah. And yeah, definitely let us know as you're playing it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have spaces for like every once in a while, you know, we're not gonna do full appendix episodes, but every once in a while we'll probably do a roundup.
Yeah.
Where people can tell us what they think of certain areas and stuff. Just keep an eye out.
Yeah. I think like the Sekiro season, it was like, you know, after the early game, here's after the Anor Londo moment, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to hear what you think.
Yeah. So
looking forward to experiencing a new FromSoft game with FromSoft folk.
Yeah. If you're hearing this, you've already supported us. So thank you. You have access to a bunch of other content, which we recommend you check out. If you have access to Unfilmable or Adaptation Decay, those are two like general media shows that have a particular remix to them. They're both enjoyable. We recommend you listen to those. Bonus episodes of Abject Suffering, etc., and down the line.
Until next time, what should they do, Cole?
Until next time, watch The White Shadow. Not the show. Just can you see the white, you know, whatever she said in the game.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.